thank you for tuning in to CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Quick quiz. Can you name all five oceans?
Atlantic.
Pacific.
Indian Ocean.
Arctic.
The answer is the Southern Ocean. No schools teach this. The Southern Ocean was only recognized 6 years ago. It stores most of the heat and almost half the carbon we add to the atmosphere. We would be cooked without it. Now the southern storm track is changing. Fresh water invades with ice and atmospheric rivers. Major flows of heat and water around Antarctica could reverse soon. Scientists find a control knob for climate feedbacks in the Southern Ocean. That may be where climate this century is determined. In this program, we explore climate and the Southern Ocean. We have two experts with years of research and publications, Dr. Zach Kaufman at Scripps Institute in San Diego and Professor Richard Williams, University of Liverpool. I'm Alex Smith. Let's go down to that unknown frontier of climate change. When it comes to soaking up excess heat we add to the atmosphere, the Southern Ocean is doing the heavy lifting. Over decades, Professor Richard Williams investigates the role of oceans in climate change. With his PhD in physical oceanography, Williams is professor of Earth, Ocean, and Ecological Sciences at the University of Liverpool. From Liverpool, Rick Williams, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Welcome. Pleased to be with you.
Human greenhouse gases are keeping more solar energy inside Earth's systems, land, air, and oceans. How much of that heat and carbon dioxide is captured by the Southern Ocean?
Yes, well, the Southern Ocean is playing a disproportionately important role in the climate system. If we look over the historical period, when we integrate climate models over a historical period, we find that over 80% of the extra heat supplied to the climate system is being taken up by the Southern Ocean, and maybe about 40% of the extra carbon is being taken up by the Southern Ocean. Now, this is important because this ocean uptake of heat and carbon is reducing the forcing that would otherwise occur for the planet. So it's reducing the amount of atmospheric carbon, and it's reducing the rise in surface temperature.
As I learn more about this, the location of the Southern Ocean seems a bit fuzzy. Many public sources call the sea anything south of 60 degrees latitude. Another recent study on oceanography used 54 degrees south as the boundary. Your paper defines the Southern Ocean as something much smaller, south of 30 degrees south. Why is that?
In some sense, I think it's slightly arbitrary definitions. The heart of the Southern Ocean is the part of the ocean that is south of the southern tip of South America and South Africa. Those waters circulate around Antarctica, and those waters connect very strongly with the atmosphere. But in terms of trying to understand the role of a particular region on the wider climate system, it's sometimes useful to apply larger domain definitions to get robust inferences.
And whether you define the Southern Ocean narrowly or broadly, this is a relatively small share of the total world sea. The Pacific alone is 8 times bigger. How can this small patch of sea account for so much carbon and heat intake?
Well, there are different perspectives here. From an ocean perspective, what's unique about the Southern Ocean is because of the pattern of wind forcing, the winds bring deep waters up to the surface south of the Antarctic Circumpolar Current. That bringing up of the surface waters effectively connects the deep ocean to the surface atmosphere. Those waters are cold and they're relatively old, and so then they are susceptible to taking up some of the excess heat and the excess carbon that is in the atmosphere. Those waters then are transferred from the surface into the ocean interior and then are hidden away from the atmosphere for many decades or centuries. So there is a unique connection between the global ocean and the atmosphere over the southern hemisphere.
But you say that doesn't mean more carbon and heat are being stored in the southern ocean. It doesn't stay there. Why not?
No, the southern ocean connects with the other northern basins. In the Atlantic, waters that move from the surface are transported as part of an overturning circulation which spreads into the North Atlantic. Southern ocean also forms bottom waters that spread northwards. So waters both at intermediate depths, at depths of maybe 500 meters, and along the seafloor, they both spread from the southern ocean into the northern basins. So these properties that the southern ocean take up from the atmosphere, both excess heat and carbon, actually end up often residing in the northern basins if we wait long enough. But the southern ocean waters originally uptake the heat and carbon in the southern hemisphere, but that heat and carbon is often stored in the northern basins.
Do we know how much hotter the world would be without this carbon and heat capture system in the Southern Ocean? Has anybody tried to calculate that?
I'm not aware of anyone calculating that, but in many ways the climate system is quite complicated. You know, over 90% of the extra heat stored in the climate system is held in the global ocean. And as I said, typically 80% of that heat is being sequestered in the Southern Ocean. But it would certainly, if this was not happening, then it would lead to much greater surface temperatures. But I'm not aware of someone having made that calculation.
Obviously, carbon dioxide and heat are quite different. The carbon mainly becomes an acid in the sea. Is the Southern Ocean becoming more acidic and, say, more acidic than the North Atlantic, for example?
Yes, heat and carbon do behave in different ways. The key thing with carbon dioxide is it reacts in seawater, forming carbonate and bicarbonate ions. And that's actually why the ocean stores up so much carbon. About 1% of the carbon held in the ocean is in the form of dissolved carbon dioxide. Most of it is in the form of bicarbonate ions. One of the prices we pay for that enhanced store is that can make the waters more acidic. But the acidity, it does vary slightly regionally. But it's not a signal that's preferentially enhanced in the Southern Ocean, as far as I'm aware. The ocean circulation redistributes those signals over the globe. So it's not only an enhancement in acidification in the locations where the carbon is usually being taken up, the ocean circulation and transport redistributes those signals.
Why is the Southern Ocean dominant in heat uptake but not carbon capture?
This is a very interesting issue, and our last paper focused on this question. The Southern Ocean is unique in terms of its connection with the atmosphere, but there's another part of the story. And the other part of the story is the forcing in the atmosphere. Over the industrial period, we've had more dust or aerosols, we call it, being emitted in the northern hemisphere. This dust and aerosols provide a cooling effect on the climate system. So the planet as a whole, up until maybe the 1980s, has been forced by increasing greenhouse gases acting to warm the climate system, together with an emission of these aerosols and this dust, which provides a cooling effect. And so there's been a partial compensation between the two. Now, that's been happening in a global sense, this partial compensation, but it's also been happening in a regional sense, in that because these aerosols have been historically emitted more in the northern hemisphere, then in that region, the warming effect from increasing greenhouse gases has been locally offset by the aerosols. Now, in contrast, over the Southern Ocean, there has not been the same input from aerosols, so the effect of the greenhouse gassing has not been offset there. So that has then led to this asymmetry between how the Southern Ocean acts in taking up heat compared with carbon. The pattern of aerosol forcing has reduced the northern hemisphere uptake of heat, but it has not affected northern hemisphere uptake of carbon. So the carbon uptake has been more symmetric between hemispheres, but there's been this big hemispheric contrast in heat uptake historically.
There's a growing public and scientific worry that the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC, could slow down or even stop. Europe would be much colder. That AMOC connects to overturning in the Southern Ocean as well, deep under the sea. They are part of one system, really. What does your research tell us about the health of the so-called global conveyor belt moderating climate?
Well, that's a very good question, and there isn't a clear consensus on this question. Direct observations, such as measurements of the strength of the Florida Current, forming part of the Gulf Stream, show that there hasn't been any change in the strength of that current over the last 40 years. But climate models, their projections, all are saying there should be a weakening in the Atlantic overturning circulation. It might simply be a question that our observational record is not yet long enough to show that decrease. Climate models are certainly sending a warning that there should be a weakening in this Atlantic overturning. I do not believe that that will cease, because part of that overturning is linked to the action of the winds as well, and the wind forcing is unlikely to dramatically change. But there could well be a weakening. So that will affect the communication of those Southern Ocean waters and their transport up to the Northern Hemisphere. That is a widespread concern about what the future might hold.
Yes, our guest Matthew England down in Australia warned that the Antarctic overturning circulation is slowing down and could possibly stop. So these things are all connected. I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one. Now, parts of the Southern Ocean, especially south of 30 degrees, goes very dark for several months in the austral winter. It also gets extremely cold. Does this seasonality affect capture of carbon dioxide or heat down there?
The whole exchange of heat and carbon is a very seasonal process. Obviously, changes in temperature vary seasonally. During summer, there can be a heat import, and then in the winter, there's a strong heat loss. But the same is happening for the biology. An important drawdown of carbon into the ocean is the effects of biological cycling, where the growth of phytoplankton leads to a drawdown of carbon. That process is happening in the springtime when there's a supply of nutrients and trace metals and there's enough light. But that process isn't happening during the winter time. So there are very strong seasonal contrasts in how the ocean takes up both heat and carbon. And that is part of the challenge in trying to work out from data what is happening. The overall annual uptake is a small residual of the seasonal contributions.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with our guest, Dr. Rick Williams from the University of Liverpool. We're talking about the ways oceans save us from immediate warming and their role in the future. Rick, what do you mean by hemispheric differences in radiative forcing?
You know, the planet ultimately is receiving extra radiative forcing because of the amounts of greenhouse gases. One of the most important greenhouse gases is water vapor, but carbon emissions have been increasing atmospheric CO2 levels. And that is leading to increased amounts of radiative forcing. We can see that in increasing temperatures in the surface and the lower part of the atmosphere. In fact, we can also see signals of that in the upper atmosphere, where there's in fact a cooling in the upper atmosphere. And this all links to the heating profile from carbon dioxide.
I'm looking at various ways hemispheric imbalance can be a climate driver or feedback. You talk about lack of symmetry between the hemispheres for heat. Does this heat imbalance have impact? Does it change things?
This hemispheric imbalance is a key way as to how the global ocean circulation operates. Southern ocean waters spread northwards at intermediate depths of maybe 500 meters, those waters spread northwards for all latitudes in the Atlantic. That northward spreading of waters also takes nutrients northwards from the Southern Ocean, and those that enables plants to phytoplankton to bloom in the Northern Hemisphere. It also, those waters are ultimately cooled in the North Atlantic. So, and then in turn, those North Atlantic waters cool and sink and return at depth and move southwards. So there's a whole set of overturning pathways, and the Southern Ocean is a key place by which those surface waters interact with the atmosphere, spread north, and then deep waters return to the Southern Ocean and communicate again with the atmosphere.
For this study, you selected the IPCC SSP 2 to 4.5 scenario, calling it middle of the road. Personally, I think it's optimistically low now, but if you had chosen the worst outcome, say the old RCP 8.5, would that change the future of carbon and heat in the Southern Ocean?
Yes, as we move to, so far we've been talking about the historical period. And in that historical period, the Southern Ocean is taking up over 80% of the global heat, but only about 40% of the global carbon. And that's linked to an asymmetry in the aerosol forcing over the hemispheres. Now, for future projections, we expect the greenhouse gas forcing to dominate the radiated forcing and the effect of aerosols to be less important. So when we use climate models to make those projections, it then becomes much more symmetric in terms of how the hemispheres take up heat. So the Southern Ocean, we from using climate models, we find takes up typically just over 50% of the extra heat that the global ocean sequesters.
Our recent guest, Brian Soden, published science showing the reduction in aerosols in the northern hemisphere in the last few years has been offset by more clouds emerging in the southern hemisphere. Did your study account for changes in clouds?
We were using coupled climate models, which, yes, have cloud feedbacks. So in principle, some of those effects are incorporated. But this is one of the big unknowns in climate models. There's a big spread in, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of how to represent cloud feedbacks and the effect of aerosols on clouds. And that uncertainty is particularly large over the Southern Hemisphere and the Southern Ocean. There are issues about whether you get super cold droplets or ice crystals, and they have different radiative effects. So there's a very large uncertainty in terms of the cloud feedbacks. Different models have different representations of those feedbacks, and that's a big uncertainty.
Your work suggests the direction of flow of excess heat in the Southern Ocean could change direction in the future. Do we know what that means and when that might happen?
Historically, the Southern Ocean has been very important in sequestering much of the heat, and that's redistributed by the overturning circulations. But in these future projections, we're seeing the Southern Ocean and the Northern Hemispheres provide a more comparable contribution. These speculations are probably at the limit of these climate models, but they then, yes, suggest that our inferences in terms of how the past ocean has operated need not always carry over for the future. And that, yes, there are implications as we move to a future state where there's much stronger greenhouse gas forcing and there's more symmetrical heat uptake, that the heat transports will then also alter.
But you're suggesting the Southern Ocean overturning may become less important in a warming world?
Well, I think it's more that the Northern Hemispheres start to catch up in terms of importance. If we have extreme levels of greenhouse gases, then historically the northern oceans, that effect has been offset by the aerosol forcing, so that the Southern Ocean was then becoming the remaining place to take up that excess heat. In future states with even greater greenhouse gas forcing, yes, the Southern Ocean is still important in taking up that heat, but the Northern Oceans start to play a more significant role. So it's not, I'm not saying that the Southern Ocean heat uptake is ceasing. It's more that the Northern Oceans also start to contribute to the global ocean heat uptake.
Paradoxically, the Southern Ocean has been cooling over the past 30 years of measurements, despite a warming world. And then, in the last couple of years, it started warming. Do you have thoughts about that?
So I think you're discussing what's happening closer to to Antarctica, where there's all sorts of ice interactions. So I'm not sure about the details there, but the more general point is that the Southern Ocean is a key place to take up heat. But much of that heat is then transported elsewhere. Then the actual surface temperatures can be very strongly affected by the strength of the winds. So if the winds are slightly stronger, that can lead to the surface cooling. But that's the paradoxical or interesting issue about the Southern Ocean. The Southern Ocean is taking up this heat, but it's not staying in that location. It's transported elsewhere. So there might be a slight cooling or a slight warming in the Southern Ocean, but its main role is taking up this excess heat from the atmosphere and redistributing it at depth over the global ocean.
Rick, as we wrap up, what are you working on now?
I'm actually working on a project about the Gulf Stream. So everyone is aware of how the Gulf Stream is important for redistributing heat. European climate is often claimed to be much warmer, or Western European climate is claimed to be much warmer through the input and through the effect of the Gulf Stream transporting warm waters towards Europe. We've been addressing the role of the Gulf Stream on the carbon cycle, and we are arguing that the Gulf Stream provides a similar role in terms of the supply of nutrients and carbon. So for nutrients, the Gulf Stream at depth transports nutrients northwards, and when those waters at depth from the Gulf Stream eventually reach the surface at maybe 50 degrees north, that supply of nutrients allows the phytoplankton to flourish, and that provides a carbon drawdown. Now, in the same way, the waters carried along the Gulf Stream at depth are often old, actually originating from the Southern Ocean. And when those old waters again reach the surface at higher latitudes, such as 50 degrees north, because those waters are old, they take up slightly more carbon because the atmospheric carbon levels are much higher than when those waters were originally in contact with the atmosphere. Our view is that not only is the Gulf Stream important in affecting the transfer of heat in the climate system, it affects the transfer of nutrients and old waters, which then affect the carbon sink of the North Atlantic.
From the University of Liverpool, we've been speaking with Professor Richard Williams. He led papers into the role of the Southern Ocean in the global climate response to carbon emissions, and more recently, asymmetries in the Southern Ocean contribution to global heat and carbon uptake. You can find links to the science and my notes published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Rick, thank you for helping us understand the big picture here.
Thank you. Delighted to talk with you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Against all expectations and model predictions, and despite record global warming, the ocean at the south end of the world is cooling. Is the Southern Ocean acting like a brake on global warming? Do changes there rearrange climate where you live, even on the other side of the world? Our guest, Zachary Kaufman, is a postdoctoral scholar affiliated with the Scripps Institute of Oceanography in San Diego. He specializes in polar ocean dynamics and publishes papers about both poles. In March 2025, Kaufman led a paper investigating cooling in the Southern Ocean, just what we want to know, and where climate kind of goes wrong in the models. From California, Zach Kaufman, welcome to